Good morning. Greetings. How are we doing today? We're starting to get the coffee flowing, get the caffeine kicking in a little bit. Y'all having a good summer so far? Yeah, cool. Awesome. I think this is like the mildest summer we've had in like a decade, maybe. Maybe. Could be. It feels like it, anyway. Hey, kids. And we've got some seats up front, too, if you're having trouble finding a seat. We've got a couple rows up here, and yeah. All right. Well, it is great to be with y'all today. It's good to be in worship today. We're going to be talking about, I think, a concept that seems simple today, but I think is often elusive when it comes to relationships, and that's the concept of mutuality. So I want to just ask, what comes to mind when you think of a mutual relationship? Like, what are some associations we have with that? Reciprocity? Yeah. What else? Respect?
Compromise,
yeah. Sacrifice, what else? Yeah. Balance. Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of a complicated idea, I think. And so I want to kind of lean into that today. And but before we do that, I want to also kind of talk about why it's complicated as we begin. Because I think on the micro level, on the moment-to-moment interactions, mutuality isn't that important. In fact, when we pay attention to mutuality all the time, it can kind of make our relationships hollow. So if in every moment I'm asking the question, is this even right now? Like, hey, I just said something nice to you, now you need to say something nice back to me, right? Or, hey, I just did that for you, so now what are you going to do for me? You know? So if we were to pay attention to mutuality all the time, in every instance, it would actually make our relationships less, I think, in some ways. So rather than doing that, I think we're actually invited in the moment-to-moment to give with no strings attached when we can. And this is really, I think, what our definition of love is about. It's the question, what can I give to another without needing anything back? So Jenna and I have different tastes in shows, like TV shows, movies and whatnot. So a lot of times when she checks in with me and wants to watch something like Arrested Development or something like that, and I think it's pretty funny, but I have, you know, I have trouble watching it in a line. So I just check in with myself and I say, can I watch this? Can I spend this time with her and just give that as a gift and need nothing back? And sometimes I'm able to say, yeah, sure, I could totally do that. And a lot of times I laugh harder than she does. It's actually a funny episode to me. And then other times I'm like, I don't think I have it. I don't think I can tonight. I have family members who often want rides and money and time. And so I just check in every time I get a text or a phone call, which has been happening a lot lately. I just say, how much can I give freely and not need anything back? Knowing that they probably won't be grateful, and they might even hate text me afterward because it wasn't what they wanted exactly when they wanted it or something. So some days I think we probably can't give anything freely, and that's okay. And some days I think we can give a little bit, and that's okay. But the principle of love on the micro level is part of Christian teaching that I think a lot of us are familiar with. We're invited to give and expect nothing in return. And by itself, if that's all we do, it will completely burn us out. I think if that's all we did, if we didn't adapt that strategy ever, you might last 2 years, maybe. Upper limit, I'm thinking. But what happens for most of us, because we've been taught an oversimplified version of love, that we either bail we're just like, I can't do this. Like, at some point we get so crispy, we just bail, or we start to get really weird. And not the good kind of weird. So I'd like to suggest today that the wisdom of Scripture also invites us to pay attention to mutuality on the macro level of a few relationships. Not every relationship, but a few close relationships. We need to pay attention to mutuality. And this is, to me, a necessary complexity that we need to grow in if we're going to stay in the love gang long term. So we're going to look at a glimpse of someone who's working out mutuality with God, actually. And that's another realm we don't really look at. So I'd invite you to read with me or aloud with the people next to you from Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 through 15. All right. So when we say liturgy means the work of the people, that's what we're talking about right there. So what is mutuality? Mutuality is a two-way relationship where there is giving and receiving in both directions. And this is actually, I had a lot of fun with this week. It's related to a concept in biology known as mutualism. And mutualism is the way two organisms of different species exist in a relationship in which each individual benefits. And if you really want to geek out on that, like, get on Wikipedia, look up mutualism, and there's all these examples. So I just want to share a few of them because it was fun. So clownfish and sea anemones. So the sea anemone protects the clownfish, and the clownfish will fend off the butterfly fish, which likes to eat sea anemones. I think I said that right. Mycorrhizal fungus. This is necessary for like 48% of plants. So like half of plants, they need this fungus that acts as this huge network among the root systems of plants. And it helps the plants get nutrients they need. It's like, hey, you need some more of that? It'll pull it from over here and give it to the plant. And then the plant will give it carbohydrates in exchange. In our gut, in our stomachs, we have this wonderful word called flora. And it helps us digest our food. And it's the beneficial bacteria that also takes a little bit for itself so it can keep going. Plant pollinators, such as bees, hummingbirds, and I think we have a picture of a hawk moth, which my kids taught me what that was. They live off the nectar of plants and flowers that they then pollinate as they drink for them. So our world is full of mutual relationships, like full of them. So what does that mean for Moses today? Because I think on the face value, we look at this story and it seems like God is giving a lot more than Moses. And for whatever reason, Moses just won't receive it. And I've heard a lot of sermons where, you know, there's like people are like dogging Moses. Like, why are you going to be dogging Moses? And I'd like to suggest that Moses is actually demonstrating mutuality with God. Mutuality invites us to look at the balance of giving on the macro level of the relationship. So in order to understand this, I think we have to zoom out a little bit on Moses' life and just look at a little bit of background. So as a baby, he was abandoned, and he was adopted by the people who enslaved his people. So they were basically killing the Israelite babies. And so his mother, to protect him, put him in a basket and sent him down the river. And then he was found by the Egyptians who were doing that. And then they raise him. And then one day when he's older, he sees an Egyptian abusing one of his kinspeople. So he goes and he ends up killing the Egyptian. And someone sees it, calls him out on it, and then he runs for his life. And he settles down as a shepherd on the backside of Midian. He gets married. He has a son. He names his son Gershom, which means stranger or one who is outcast. That's his legacy. I kind of imagine he has the temperament of like Charlie Brown or Eeyore a little bit. He's like, okay, had a son, might as well call him outcast since that's my lot in life. You know, it's like, and I mean, just as a side, I haven't looked at baby books in a while, but I'm guessing this is not at the top of the names. Have you seen those name lists, like the top 10 most popular baby names? It's like, hey, what are you naming your baby? Oh, I think I'm going to call him Outcast or Stranger. Well, why? I don't know. I'm just feeling that way about my life. You know, hey, Mom, this kid invited me over to play. Cool. After school, great. What's his name? Outcast? Awesome. Sorry. I mean, you know, it's just like, it's interesting, but you can kind of get this sense, like Moses hasn't had it that great in life, in his estimation. So what do you imagine his opinion of God might be at this point? I mean, does he perceive God has given him a whole lot throughout his life? Probably not. Yet Moses is given this experience this day, and he can't really receive it, I don't think, but he can't ignore it either. And that's what we see in verses 1 through 6. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro's father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see the strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. It's pretty awesome. So God comes to the table, like, pretty big with Moses. Maybe he knew, like, that's what Moses would need. Maybe it was because God knew, I'm going to ask something really big of this guy, so I need to really, you know, show some fireworks or something. I don't know. But God doesn't owe this to Moses. I think that's what's important also, is mutuality is not about entitlement. It's about being in a relationship where there's both giving and receiving. And I know people who've had vivid experiences with God. Maybe you have as well. And they've heard audible voices. They've seen visions. I haven't, actually. My experience of God speaking to me is usually just a voice in my thoughts. It's like a thought within my thoughts that's different somehow from the others. It tends to be smarter and wiser. It tends to be a little bit kinder and a little bit more noble. Like, that's the best I can describe it. And a year ago, when I was kind of re-engaging a call to step back into ministry, I was taking a walk and I was like, you know, hey, God, you and I, we need to talk about this. I had kind of like a DTR, like, we're going to define our relationship again. And I was very upfront. I said, you know, our relationship has kind of been indirect the past couple of years, which has been fine. Like, don't get me wrong, it's okay. I mean, I haven't needed it to be anything different. But if I'm going to do this, this is kind of vulnerable. Like, if you're really wanting me to kind of get back into that, and I'm going to need you to step up a little bit. And God doesn't owe me anything. I mean, I get that, but I think it's okay. Like, people in the Bible pray this way, and I thought, it's okay for me to just be honest. And what I sensed in that moment was God say, okay. And that was enough. It wasn't a shrub on fire, you know, it wasn't, but that was enough for me. Like, that's what I needed, was just some kind of assurance that, you know, I wasn't going into it alone. I mean, a shrub on fire would have been nice. I mean, that would have been awesome. I would have loved that. But that was enough. And I think oftentimes, you know, when we look at a relationship over the whole, we can feel like the balance of giving is off, whether that be in our relationship with God or our relationship with other people. And with our closer relationships, I think this really matters over time. In fact, when there's a growing bitterness or cynicism about a relationship, oftentimes that's an indicator that mutuality isn't active, like it isn't happening, and that needs some attention. So I want to invite us this week to just do like a giving check-in Like, think about your relationship with God. If you don't have a relationship with God, that's totally fine. Not a problem. But if that's an active part, or think about a few close friends, what is the balance of giving been? And here's some questions, maybe just to help you through that. So what would it look like to move toward mutuality? Sometimes that means we need to give less. So there may be some close relationships where we feel like we're giving a lot more than the other is giving. And sometimes we give out of fear, we give out of shame, we give because we're afraid of someone getting mad at us or withdrawing. And I want to suggest that that kind of giving, it doesn't really serve our relationship. It doesn't serve intimacy. And sometimes we need to step back and look at why am I kind of compulsively giving, if you will? Why am I giving in a way that isn't really creating intimacy, but it's actually creating something else? And then where do we need to give more? I think sometimes we need to engage a little bit more. We need to step up. Sometimes we need to focus our giving too. So many times I've thought, oh, I'm just giving so much, you know, in my marriage or in a friendship. And then I find out later they never really wanted me to give that way. Like, I found out after years and years, like, Jenna didn't want me to bring her flowers. And we had been married like 12 years. And I was like, why didn't you tell me sooner? She's like, I don't know, just, you know, it's like dead and it's this dying thing that's going to die. She's like, give me a live plant. Cool, totally can do that. So sometimes even what we give, we need to kind of tune it in a little bit more, if you will. So check in. Just do an inventory. Think about that. Okay, so God gives Moses this amazing experience. And then he asks Moses to lead, and that was enough, right? I mean, God says in verse 10, so now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Sometimes I think we can be surprised. You're like, Moses, but the bush on fire, it's speaking. Like, how is that not enough for you? And I think this shows us that it's not enough just to attend to the giving balance, but we also need to attend to the balance of receiving in our close relationships. Sometimes it isn't that people aren't giving to us or we're not giving. It's that receiving is not happening. And so that's something that I think mutuality also invites us to look at, the balance of receiving in the macro level of the relationship over the long view. In verse 12, God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they say to me, ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you should call me from generation to generation. So God receives from Moses. I think that's important to look at in this exchange. God receives Moses' curiosity. Like, you know, God, Moses leans in, he's like, oh, I'm going to go check that out. You know, and it says that God waits for him to talk. So he says when he notices that Moses comes over, then he starts speaking to him. God receives his questions. Moses has like several questions. But what about this, God? What about that? What about this? Like, if you were, if he came to you for a job and you had choice of other people, you would not hire Moses, right? Like, if you were interviewing for positions, you had 100 people. And you had someone like, what about this? I'm not really good at that. And like, he would not be a good hire at all. But God receives that. Like, he receives his resistance. And he receives, eventually, his reluctant service. But Moses doesn't receive from God at first. And I really appreciate this because I think it's difficult for us to receive sometimes. it takes a while, I think, for our hearts to really open and recognize the grace being offered. Have you ever had someone apologize to you and they were sincere and you said, I forgive you, but then you still, it's not all better like that. My heart's like slow. It's like a rusty dial, I think. I know people who they can just flip a switch and they're like, okay, cool, we're good. You know, we can. And I'm like, okay, the forgiveness got it back up a little bit. I'm going to need a little bit more time just to let the door open a little bit more. So, you know, give me a little patience here. So that's what I like about Moses. Moses is like, most of my life, God, you have not dealt me a good hand, or I have not really seen a lot from your end. So I'm not going to just all of a sudden to trust you just because you did an awesome pyro thing today. I also think that at times we can even just become desensitized, though, too. Like sometimes we have trouble receiving, particularly from God, because I think we become kind of numb to what's sacred. Or like, it's like we lose the sensitivity. We lose the touch for what is the sacred? What does the miraculous even feel like? And I imagine it actually could be a little bit like this.
She'll be riding six white horses when she comes. She'll be riding six white horses when she comes.
Excuse me.
Come on,
are you the singing bush?
Follow the sea with a yo-ho, we'll blow the man down. Oh, pay attention and listen.
Let me talk to him.
Excuse us. Are you the singing bush?
Yo-ho, blow the man down. Yo-ho, blow the man down.
Hello?
Yo-ho,
hi.
Blow the man down.
Hi.
Give me some time to blow the man down.
Excuse us!
Good night, ladies. Good
hey!
Good night, ladies. Good night, ladies. We're gonna leave you now. Merrily we roll.
Forget
along,
it. My guess along, is this is a singing bush.
Let's go summon the invisible swords.
Summon the invisible swords. I can't believe I'm doing this.
You know, let me see here. We each have to fire one shot in the air, say the magic chant, and the invisible swordsman will appear.
Chip, 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 Manny!
Well, I got an old mule, her name is Sal, 15 miles on the Erie Canal. She's a good
Farley, 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 off her! That's it.
Filled with lumber, coal, and hay, and we know every inch of the way from Albany to Buffalo.
And I'm all work, Dad. Come on. Great! You've killed the invisible swordsman!
He's dead, all right.
How was I supposed to know where he was?
You were supposed to fire up. We both fired up.
It's like living with a 6-year-old.
Now we'll never find El Guapos. He's the only one who could show the
All
way.
Right.
We're lost.
It's hard to show the singing bush and not the invisible swordsman. That was the three amigos, just in case. So I think oftentimes we don't recognize the miraculous. And I think it's something we dismiss, even daily in our lives, in much more subtle ways. Simply because we don't see it for what it is. How can we receive something we don't see? And I would say the spiritual life is actually more about seeing than maybe anything else. There's a poet I really appreciate who she says it this way. Somehow we must see through the shimmering cloth of daily life, its painted, evasive facings of what to eat, to wear, which work matters, is a bird more or less than a person. There have been people who helped the world, named or not named. They weren't interested in what might matter. double over as they were with compassion, laden branches, bright rivers. When a bulb burns out, we just change it. It's not the bulb we love, it's the light. I think sometimes our lives shrink back to where all we see is the bulb. All we see is the glowing filament or the glass casing. And we can miss the glow. Or perhaps our eyes are in the habit of finding the darkest possible meaning or explanation. You ever do that where you just take that inventory of yourself and you just kind of come up with the worst possible interpretation of your behavior, who you are? And that's just a habit. We just get in a habit of that. That's something a lot of times we learn early on, and nobody taught us how to treat ourselves with compassion or grace. When our primary experiences are filled with condemnation and shame, we often internalize that and believe that's what's authentic, like that's what's most true. In reality, it's not. It's just what we're used to. It's just familiarity. It's I think I've shared before, growing up, I grew up in a home and at school where I received a message over and over, you're stupid, you don't know anything. And so I went to college, and I wouldn't talk, like, for the first year. I mean, I was a freshman anyway, and it was UT. But even then, I was scared to death to raise my hand. And then I had an experience with God, and I felt like I knew something. Like, oh, I know something. Like, this was real. Like, God's real. God helped me. God brought some healing. And I wanted to talk about it. So whenever I did, apparently, at the end of it, I would always say, but I don't know. I don't know. And finally, I had several friends who were like, we are so tired of you saying that. You know something, so shut up and just say it. That was good for me. But I think we each have like a critical part of us. And I think we often let voices in or look for voices that reinforce that condemnation as we look to see our way forward. Jesus suggests that in order to receive light and health, we have to have eyes that see. We have to have healthy eyes. He says it this way in Matthew 6, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? So when our eyes are bad, we can't even tell what light is. So how can we become healthy? How can we get new eyes? And I want to suggest that's why we need community. We need to receive grace from other people and from God in order for our eyes to become new. We need to go through the messy work of belonging, of throwing in our lot, of saying, okay, I don't know you guys that well, but you're going to be my people. I'm going to throw in my lot with you. And what that means, by the way, which is not really exciting, is we're making ourselves vulnerable to be hurt, to be rejected. And we tell people, we will disappoint you. I'm sorry. We probably already have. And we will, not like we're trying to. We don't like say, hey, how can we disappoint everybody this week? But it's going to happen. And this is, I think, why a lot of us have resistance to really committing at times to relationship or community. But we need people that can kind of help us see that we're lovable, that can kind of help us see that we're actually worthy of mutuality. I think a lot of times we don't even think we're worthy of a mutual relationship. And Moses had lots of resistance to receiving from God. He goes like five rounds. Like if you continue this, and we're going to, in a couple weeks, look at chapter 4. He goes five rounds with God where God's like, okay, you know, here I want you to do this. And Moses is like, but what about this? You know, and God's like, okay. And he's like, but what about that? And then at the end, Moses is just like, could you just send someone else? Is there anybody else? I don't want to do this. And God hangs in there and pursues him with kindness the whole way. And when I read that, it just makes me wonder, what if that's who God really is? Like, what if God is this patient with us? What would that mean, really? Think about that. What if God is patient with every bit of resistance in us, every part of us that falls on our face and picks gravel out from our foreheads if we crashed a bike? What if he doesn't even flinch at that? Like, that's who he is. Oftentimes, the balance of receiving is off in our relationships. I think for many of us, it's easier to give than receive. Actually, giving isn't that vulnerable sometimes. Like, usually we just give in the way we want people to give to us. That's what I usually do. So receiving can actually be more vulnerable. So how do we open our hearts when they're closed the majority of our day? So I kind of wanted to offer this as a receptivity check-in this week. Just a few questions to consider. How am I receiving from God? And practically, if you've never really thought about that, I would suggest each day this week, at the end of it, think of a couple things that you're grateful for and just give God credit for it. Just, you know, God, thanks that this person wasn't as mean to me today. You know, God, thanks that I have a roof, you know, over my head. Just go ahead and give him some credit. Just receive it as grace. Other people, who do I need to receive more from? Who are the people that are gracious to me, who actually speak grace into my life? And then, who are the people I need to receive less from? Who are the people that shame me, who put me down, that I need to filter out? Or who are the people, you know, maybe you're in a relationship and there's kind of both. How do you teach them what's shame and what's grace? How do you say, hey, okay, I don't really like it when you talk to me that way. Or if you want to bring it up, talk about yourself a little bit more or something. Don't just talk to me about my behavior. So sometimes we need to teach people how to be gracious to us. So this is just, all of what we're talking about is just practice. Like, this is just practicing attending to the balance of receiving from other people. You know, one of the ways we look at it on the whole is if, you know, say we've been watching Jenna's show all week, and I'm like, hey, you know, and then she's like, hey, let's watch them. I'm like, cool. I think let's, or the other way, maybe we've been watching my shows and you know, and the other one's like, okay, well, how about let's do my show because we've been kind of doing your show for a while, you know, things like that. On a large scale, not that our life is any kind of formula for anybody, but we've also shifted our focus on each other's career. The first 5 years of our relationship, we focused on my career, and then we switched. In the next 5 to 7 years, we focused on Jenna's career, and I stayed home with our daughter. And so we've also looked at mutuality in terms of our calling. You know, how do you make room for both callings? So it's just practice. It's just practice. And I think practice is a word of grace, because I think in some ways we're all like toddlers just staggering around with all these goose egg bumps on our head from hitting the coffee table. I really do. I have that vision of that. That's what it means. If you're going to practice mutuality more, you're like, you just got to build in falling on your face a lot, a lot, a lot. Like, that's going to happen. But we just keep getting up, right? And keep trying. So why are we more comfortable receiving shame and criticism than receiving grace and kindness? I think it's just a habit. Relationships of mutual giving and receiving are also a habit. And to me, that's what's really hopeful, is we can unlearn and learn something new in a, maybe not a relatively short period of time, but we can see some changes in a relatively short period of time. In fact, some of these things could take our whole life. And I just want to close with a poem today that was actually published by its author when she was 57 years old. So it might take a while. Her name is Portia Nelson, and you may be familiar with this poem. It's called An Autobiography in 5 Short Chapters. Chapter 1, I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I am in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. I invite you to pray with me. God, what if you're really this patient? What if it's true? What if every part of our journey is meaningful? The street, the hole in the sidewalk, the fall again and again, the surprise, the blaming, our eyes opening, the getting out of the hole, the walking around the hole, the new street. What if it's all okay in some inexplicable way? Maybe even necessary in some strange way. God, I pray you'd help us receive your grace in every piece of where we are today and the next. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.